Touchdown, Los Angeles.
You are Locked On Rams, your daily Los Angeles Rams podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, ever.
Listen, where's the ball? Rams Nation. What's happening? What's good? It's your boy, Bear Motter of Rams Podcast, but this is Locked On Rams. Friday edition of Locked On Rams, and what a good Friday it is. It's 75 and sunny. Got my coffee over here in Southern California. No complaint forms necessary. And got a little bonus today. We're going to kind of just do another Rams edition. We're going to potentially have James Kroger on. And then I got a hold with the Locked On Bengals guy, Joe Goodberry, and we decided to make it happen. So we did our crossover Friday edition Locked On Bengals, Locked On Rams, kind of a preview series continued. We are now up to week 8, and we're going over to London to face the Cincinnati Bengals. So we talked about that today with Joe. I'll get to that here in just a second. Guys, don't forget you can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Locked On Rams. Hit us up. Say what's up. Tell me where you're listening from. This actually goes out to all the people listening out in London or in the UK. We are coming your way, and I'm excited to kind of bring some football and have you guys have an opportunity. I've already had multiple people reach out, say they're going to the game, so that is awesome. Get loud and proud, represent Rams Nation for us. Don't forget, you can also find me, LA_RamblingBear. That is the personal. Share some pictures when you guys are over there during this international game. Love to see all that stuff. Also, you can find the podcast on the new streaming app, Himalaya. Also, Google Podcast, Spotify, iTunes, all that good stuff and more. If you can't find us, hit me up. I will give you a link. I hope everyone is having a great Friday, getting ready for the weekend just around the corner. If you guys are driving to work or coming home from work, we will be back next week. We're going to have some more guests on. We're going to talk with James Kroger, Downtown Rams, may fill in another crossover. But what I'll do now is just kick it over to the conversation I had earlier today with Joe Goodberry, Locked On Bengals. Hope you guys have a great weekend. Don't forget, we'll be back next week. But you know what it is, Rams Nation. Until next time. Peace. All right, welcome back, everybody. This is a Locked On Podcast crossover, probably my favorite thing to do here on the network. We are doing a season preview of the schedule. We are up to week 8, and that means Rams versus Bengals in London. So we've got Joe Goodberry with us from Locked On Bengals. How you doing, Joe?
I'm doing fantastic. Got a little cold, but I think it's the last day of it, and I should be good.
Man, it was, I'm just glad we made it here because Twitter shut down like 10 minutes before we were going to do this, and we didn't have our Skype contact, but we were able to make it work here and talk some football. I'm excited about this season. I'm excited to kind of hear your take. Obviously, you've got some connection to the Rams now as your head coach out there with Zach Taylor. So exciting things all around. I want to kick it off with just really ending the era and having Zach Taylor come in. What's the feel like for Bengals fans right now and just the outlook on what the potential for this season could be?
I think the majority is hope. It's been so long. It's kind of scary at the same time because if you're 25 to 35, you probably only know Marvin Lewis as a Bengals head coach. And even if you're younger than that, but probably experienced the full 16 years of him being here. And just to see anybody else run the team or answer the questions or be the face of the organization, it's strange. You really don't know what to expect because right. With Marvin, you kind of felt like they'd get to 7 wins most years, 6, on the bad years. And at best, they get 11 wins or so. And they'd be in that range, always competitive and just good enough to maybe make it to the playoffs. And that was okay for a while. And then you get bored and tired of it and sick of it because they weren't going any further. And it was time for them to, split mutually. So with Zach Taylor, that range with any new coach could be 2 wins. It could be as far down as that. And we haven't experienced that in so long that I think the small percentage of the fan base is kind of scared.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about taking on a first-time head coach, but underneath the Sean McVay coaching tree, which is weirdly growing in a short period of time, And there are some questions on what he can get done. Did some great work out here in Los Angeles. But again, you know, looking at the coaching staff from top to bottom, it was a group effort. They had a lot of great offensive minds kind of going into it. But for you guys, in a weird way, as you talked about that 7-9 record, and us Rams fans, that rings a bell, right? That's kind of Jeff Fisher numbers and, you know, kind of hung on for a long time. But something new, hopefully refreshing for you guys. But unfortunately, none of us, well, not, I won't say none of us, but neither of us really get a good opportunity to watch this game because it's over in London, which should bring some excitement to it. But looking at the offense, I mean, you guys going, you know, going back to the draft here a little bit, you know, unfortunate, Jonah Williams goes down, number one pick, 11th overall, out for this season. What did the rest of the draft look for you, and how are you guys kind of picking up those pieces and trying to move forward?
That's the saddest part, is now you got to just get rid of the 11th pick. So everyone is fully aware that their offensive line was the biggest talent issue on the team. And so they go, okay, we'll invest in it. We'll sign a guy in the offseason, which was John Miller, a guard. Okay, maybe a baseline level starting guard. But we'll spend the first pick, and Jonah Williams, the best tackle in the draft. That's great. New left tackle. That should help your offensive line. And now you lose that. And you say, well, okay, who else did they pick? And the second guy they picked was a blocking tight end that was projected to go day three. And I had the Bengals taking Drew Sample out of Washington, but I had him taking him in the sixth round with one of their compensatory picks. So they take him in round two. Now, I like Drew Sample. He was a good prospect. He's a guy that I thought, fantastic blocker, and I actually think he's a little bit better receiver than he was used in Washington. But I don't agree with the value in round two, so it makes it extremely hard to get on board and then now say he's the top draft pick coming in this year. He's the biggest addition to the team. It's crazy because I don't expect him to have that huge of an impact. Now, if he's a good blocker, and he probably walks in as the best blocker on the team and at tight end, how much does that actually help you? And then, you know, in a Rams-style offense, how much is he actually going to be out there or be targeted? Is it going to be worth it? And if Tyler Eifert's healthy and they extended both Eifert and CJ Uzomah this offseason, how much is Drew Sample really going to play?
Right. So you're looking at it, and your first two picks off the board aren't going to be obvious impact players. One's injured and the other one, you know, sitting behind one of the, you know, top tier tight ends in the league, especially as you talked about coming into this Rams offense, that if, you know, they kind of tailor it that way, and maybe, you know, pun intended there, but right. You're looking at 11 personnel and three wide receivers, and, you know, have you gotten an understanding of what Zach Taylor is going to try to do? Is, from my understanding, they're going to kind of somewhat stay on that pathway, or do you think he's going to break out into his own a little bit?
Well, like the first day he said, he wants to mirror a Rams style offense, and why wouldn't he? Isn't that the reason they hired him? And I'm like, yeah, actually, that makes a lot of sense. That is the reason you're hired, is to try and replicate this offense and bring it to Cincinnati. But he also has mentioned a lot about how too predictable they were towards the end of the year, and how it hurt them in the Super Bowl, and how they need to be a little bit more multiple or flexible than staying in 11 personnel 95% of the game in a lot of games that the Rams were. So I do think it's going to be a Rams-style offense in terms of wide zone, mid zone running, and a lot of running, a lot of heavy play action, and a lot of jet motion and sweep action from the wide receiver. I do think baseline offense, that's going to be it. But I do think they're afforded a little bit of opportunity to do different things. And the Rams got a really good trio of wide receivers, but they don't have AJ Green, to be honest. And yeah, Green can do everything and anything. So you are able to maybe flex him out, split him out a wide, and do more things with him instead of having everyone condensed and bunched in, which helps your receivers. But you don't need to do that with Green. And maybe you can flip the defense a little bit by having him out, spread out a little bit further, and just the different variety of routes you can run with him, and throw him the jump balls and the deep balls and everything in between. And then Tyler Eifert, when he's healthy, he makes this offense completely different. He's a big slot receiver that is a mismatch for safeties and linebackers and even corners. So whenever he's healthy, it's crazy. 2015 and then the first four games of last year, because it's like that's it when he's been healthy, Andy Dalton's been at his best. This offense looks phenomenal, and it's really because he is such a mismatch that when him and Green are out there, you have somebody open on every play. So I think having those two guys makes them a little bit different than the Rams offense, because it gives them a little bit of flexibility. Now, I'm comparing a bad offense to obviously one that went to the Super Bowl. All I'm saying is personnel-wise, they're a bit different, and that's going to afford them the opportunity to be different.
Yeah, and I think really as you're looking at the offense and if it is something that is tailored out of the Rams offense, then you're looking at guys like Tyler Boyd and John Ross that hopefully really improve from this, right? We know what AJ Green can do when given opportunities, and you hope that kind of opening up the offense a little bit gives them a few more, you know, mismatches or opportunities down the field. And obviously a healthy Tyler Eifert, and you mentioned it right there, healthy. When he's healthy, good. When he's not, obviously you can't play, so you can't do much. But I think those other guys are really the ones that hopefully have an opportunity for you guys to step up, especially John Ross. I mean, a guy that we saw with crazy speed, drafted, you know, high expectations, didn't really come into it. I know he came into a lot of scrutiny out there. I follow those Washington guys pretty close, have some history back up in the Seattle area, and I was really excited about him coming out and, you know, kind of so far, I don't want to say a dud, but definitely not anything to get excited about. But this is an opportunity for those guys, that wide receiver 2-3, to step in and be able to kind of get into the flow of the offense, and hopefully that's where they take a big step forward. As we're talking about the offense, last question I have for you really is, at running back, is this Joe Mixon's, you know, job to lose at the sense, or is Bernard really going to make a push? And what's that running back look like this year?
Yeah, I think it is Joe Mixon, and I think they want it to be Mixon, and they want to lean on him and put him in a Todd Gurley role and a Todd Gurley offense. And I think they run very similar. They have very similar strengths and weaknesses as big guys that have, I want to say, sneaky speed, because you know what I mean? They don't have to break tackles, because I think the angle is underestimated by the defender, and they run by them so often, and their hands are good, and they can run routes and the screen passes, and they have really good vision on the outside zone runs and can cut it back against the grain without losing any speed. I think Mixon could be in line for a huge year. I've been telling people in fantasy to draft him, and draft him as soon as you can if you're in the back half of the first round. So for me, looking at it last year, when he was healthy, he carried the ball top five in the league in terms of touches per game. So I think that'll continue. They don't want to wear him down. Even Taylor has mentioned this about the Rams, of saying, we kind of wore out Todd Gurley a little bit there. I don't want to do that again. And Bernard had his least amount of action last year. They just couldn't find a way to sustain drives and get him into the game and keep an even flow between he and Mixon, because they wanted to keep giving Mixon the ball. Bernard's a good back. He's a good player. They need to figure out how to use both, and use both in a healthy way that isn't going to hurt one or the other, and maximize and maybe play off both of them. So I do think Mixon's in line for 300 touches, way more targets, way more opportunities to catch the ball. I look at Todd Gurley, and I looked at his stats with Jeff Fisher and that Rams team, right? And Fisher was kind of like a talent denier, a suppressor. Right. He made everyone play a little bit worse than they should have, right? There's how many guys on that roster where you're like, man, Nick Foles, I mean, there's you can name probably 20 guys where you're like, these guys just played way under expectation. And I think that's how we feel about Marvin Lewis. And even though Joe Mixon was all right year two, he led the AFC in rushing yards. I mean, that's good. There was so much more meat on the bone there that could be had. And I think if in a right offense, we could really see the potential or the end game of Joe Mixon, which I think is really high.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, kind of seeing potential in a player and not getting it and understanding maybe that has something to do with the coach. Because, I mean, Tavon Austin was a great example of that, because you felt like, man, Tavon should be better than this. You saw so many explosive plays from him. And then when Sean McVay came in and then we still couldn't get anything out of Tavon, you're like, okay, maybe it's not the coach.
Right.
Maybe Tavon's just a little overrated and we need to move on from him, which we did. And he went to Dallas and you kind of saw him not really still doing what he was doing here. So it is kind of funny, because there were players that definitely excelled once Jeff Fisher left, and then players that kind of stayed the same. That's going to be a big case for you guys this year, trying to figure out who are those players on your team that maybe just aren't a good fit there in Cincinnati. And I'm with you, man. I'm a big fan of Joe Mixon this year as far as in the fantasy world. I think they're going to kind of play off of, like you said, having that Todd Gurley type back. And Zach Taylor also coming in, understanding that they overuse Todd Gurley, and hopefully has a better game plan to, you know, keep, especially, you know, Mixon, young player. You want to get multiple years of production out of him. So going to be interesting to see how he uses him coming off of this interesting case of the mysterious what the heck's going on with Todd Gurley's knee that no one's talking about, but everyone's talking about. And, you know, we'll see how that plays out. But what we'll do is we'll step aside. We'll take a break. We'll be back. We'll talk a little defense. We'll talk some predictions. Lockdown crossover. Bengals and Rams. We'll be right back after this.
welcome to church. In the heart of the city. My nigga wins for love. Ain't no love in the heart of town. Wins for love.
All right, everybody, we are back. Locked On Rams. This is the Friday edition. A little crossover for you. We've got Locked On Bengals, Locked On Rams, talking about this week eight matchup over in London, how the teams are kind of looking and how the matchup's going to be. Make sure you can find out all of our podcasts on the new streaming app, Himalaya. Download it. It's free, super easy to use. You can find our show at Locked On Rams or my personal at LA underscore Rambling Bear. You can find Joe at Joe Barry on Twitter, and also Locked On Bengals is where that show is at. And you're doing some writing as well. Where else could they find your content?
You can find me at The Athletic and Athletic Cincinnati. And we're in the summer mode, so I'm only posting maybe once or twice a month. But well, I'm doing a piece right now, and this may pertain to your listeners, where I'm reviewing the Sean McVay and Rams offense and how Zach Taylor could copy it and what exactly they're doing. First thing was looking at the running game, the wide and mid zone, and why it's successful, why it's different than the rest of the league. And then I went on to play action passes and the two major concepts that they try to use on almost every play action pass. So next will be their favorite passing options or routes and route combinations.
Yeah, and you talked about that play action there. I mean, that was the bread and butter. I mean, you set up the run so much with Todd Gurley, and then it gave Jared Goff so much time back there to really – obviously, offensive line helps, and you're going to struggle there a little bit with the injury, you know, to your number 11 draft pick. But that is a big key of what that offense was mixing in good run, good pass, play action, and then keeping the defense guessing on which was coming. So it's going to be fun. I mean, there's, you know, to see what they're going to do and how this offense is going to change so dramatically. I remember seeing a clip from Andy Dalton talking about how excited he was to kind of, you know, pick up the pace a little bit on the offense side of the ball. But, you know, looking on the other side, on the defense side of the ball, you guys got some big names, obviously, coming back. You got Dunlap and Atkins on the line. Kurtzpatrick in the secondary. Where's your gap? Where's the biggest camp battle coming in on the defense side of the ball?
Ooh, you know, it's funny because this is the 32nd ranked defense for maybe like 13 out of 17 weeks last year. They were horrendous. They had to fire their coordinator halfway through the year, and Marvin Lewis took over as the defense coordinator, and he made him salvageable for that last quarter of the year and got him out of the basement. But they made no major additions to this defense, and they pretty much said, "We're bring everyone back. Let's stay healthy. Let's get rid of Vontaze Burfict." They drafted Jermaine Pratt, linebacker at NC State, in the third round. He's not projected to start, but there is a battle there at linebacker in camp where he's going to go against Jordan Evans at Oklahoma, who is a third-year guy now, who's had an up-and-down first 2 years, but I think he's got the potential to hold off Pratt as a starter. And then Hardy Nickerson. No, we don't want him starting, Bengals fans. If you're listening to that. He was terrible last year. But the Malik Jefferson, their third-round pick out of Texas last year, only played 11 snaps at linebacker all year. And we are all hoping that somehow, some way he gets into a mix at linebacker and can find a starting spot. But if not, it's going to be Nick Vigil and Preston Brown as the two, you know, majority snap takers at that position. And really look at it, and I think if there's a competition, it's who is the other defensive end, the third defensive end, the nickel guy that comes in and plays a little bit defensive tackle next to Geno Atkins, because the Bengals traditionally, now I don't know if this will continue, I think it will based on personnel, but they traditionally on the defensive line will go with three defensive ends and Atkins on that line to pass rush. And right now it'll probably be, if healthy, Carl Lawson and Carlos Dunlap on the edge. But who's that other guy inside now? And it was Michael Johnson for a while, Wallace Gilberry, guys like that are career journeymen. And Johnson had a good career, but, you know, at the end of his career, he needed to kick inside to provide anything. He's gone now. So they signed Kerry Wynn from the Giants, but are they going to lean on Sam Hubbard, who was a third-round pick last year, who had a decent rookie year, or Jordan Willis, who was a third-round pick the year before that, who's kind of got lost in the shuffle, hasn't had the pass-rushing opportunities. But I think if he gets them, he could show that he's worthy of some rotations on the defensive line.
So the defense has a long way to come to kind of compete with this offense, which you expect to take a big step, obviously, with the hire of the head coach. Filling in that linebacker area that you mentioned and kind of competing, because you don't want to go into that down that road of, and the Rams did it for part the year last year where the defense kind of looked at the offense and said, hey, can you score 35 points and we'll win the game?
Right.
And they got better near the end and really kind of became tighter as a group, and we got some players back. Marcus Peters was banged up. Aqib Talib was out for a while. So that is tough, though, when you look at your offense every time and saying, hey, you got to really do this. And so hopefully for you guys to take that step, that next level step in gaining some defensive balance there, so you don't have to look at these guys and go, hey, it's going to take 35 points to win every game. And, you know, kind of looking at your schedule, the Rams are going to be pretty big fans of you guys for the first couple weeks. You play at Seattle and at home versus San Francisco, two NFC West opponents that we would like to see go, you know, get a couple losses right out of the books. But then you go at Buffalo, at Pittsburgh, Arizona, at Baltimore, Jacksonville, and then us in London. Looking at that first half of the schedule, when you guys get to week 8 to face the Rams, what are the expectations of the record? What do you see it possibly being? Talk to me a little bit about that.
Looking at the history of first year or recent history of first year coaches, they typically start off slower and then find their footing and then finish strong. And that makes sense, especially if you have a decent roster. And I think the Bengals do. So if Taylor's the right guy, he may still start slow. I could see the first half going maybe 3-5 the first 8 games, even if it's 2-6, because they're not projected to be good. I think they're over under 6, 6.5, depending on where you look. I do think they're a little bit better than that. I would say eventually they'll get to the over and hit 7 wins, but it'll probably come in the second half of the schedule. Maybe they go 4-3 there and 3-5 in the first half, and that would make sense to me. I think that first game versus Seattle is going to be tough in Seattle, home, you know, NFL opener kickoff weekend. That's probably a loss. And then Pittsburgh's always in their head. Maybe a fresh start with a coach and vision will change that and allow them to compete a little bit differently. I think Buffalo has a chance to be much better because if their quarterback takes a step in development year 2, they're going to be tough. And the Ravens are always competitive, but I think the Ravens are a little overrated nationally. So the Bengals could win that one. I see 2 clear tough games, and that's Seattle and Pittsburgh before they get to the Rams. And so those 3 games, if they ended up dropping those 3, and then you got a couple toss-ups in there and a couple easy ones. So I think the first half is going to be, I think we'll be able to figure out exactly who they are in terms of, can they compete with these decent teams? Are they good enough to compete with these good teams? Which I don't think we all expect, but if they are, that'd be a great bonus because that second half of the schedule is not too bad.
Yeah, and you nailed it there. And looking at a couple of the home games you have, you almost wish you could trade away a couple of those away games. You know, Arizona, right, and San Francisco at home. Those are kind of maybe the 2 easiest on the schedule. You're like, maybe you could flip and do that on the road and take, you know, Buffalo and Pittsburgh at home. But obviously you play Pittsburgh at home and away, and you got to do
Seattle.
It at some point.
Give me that Seattle game.
Give you that Seattle, right. That's going to be a tough one to open the season. But you'll have some fans out here in L.A. rooting for you for sure. Okay, so we know Rams went to the Super Bowl. Big, you know, expectations coming back out here is almost the same expectation. Get back to the Super Bowl, or, you know, we're not excited in a sense because of, you know, getting there, tasting it, seeing the roster be somewhat the same, adding some veteran pieces, and in some people's eyes, getting a little bit better. It's in London. Does this help you? Does it hurt you? Do you think you have a shot in this game? Talk to me about that Week 8 matchup in London.
You know, I wonder, I don't know. The Bengals did play in London a few years ago. I want to say 2016 versus the Redskins. I think Washington beat them in with a late second field goal or overtime. But I think there was a lot of Bengals fans there. I think it's a mixed crowd normally, but I don't know. I think for travel-wise, it's definitely a little bit longer of a travel for the Rams. But I feel like because they were just in the Super Bowl, there'd be much more excitement for them and maybe more energy there for them. So that's going to be a disadvantage. Really, both teams, it's almost an away game for them. So I think I just look at it as which team's better at that point. But you see a lot of weird things happen when you go overseas. Those games that can tend to be pretty sloppy or just very random.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the Rams were in London 2 years ago. We faced the Cardinals and we blew them out 35-0.
Really?
And then the year before that, we went and faced the Giants, and I think they beat us. And Case Keenum had a ball go off of the wire, the camera wire, and it was picked off. It was kind of a weird play. But you're right. You go over there. It's the travel. It's the experience. They're kind of showing them off to that crowd over there. So, you know, there anything can happen. I mean, it's one of those sayings, any given Sunday, right? But I right. think at the end of the day, this one looks like something if you're looking at the Rams schedule where you almost chalk it up as a W if you're given a win-loss projection total because of the rosters, right? Yes, you guys have come a long way. You've got some good talent. First-year coach overseas, there's some logistic things that might be tricky for that organization. We'll see how they kind of adjust to it. But the Rams, if they want to be one of those, you know, defending Super Bowl appearance type of groups, then this is a game you have to win against a team that, you know, is coming in, last year record, like you said, 6-7 wins, something like that.
Yeah, it was in that range.
So it's supposed to be a game that you're supposed to win, but again, you never know what happens. And then just kind of looking at the season, you talked about the win-loss total. What are your expectations? You think they're going to pass that? You talked about, you know, coaching getting stronger in the second half. Is there a chance that this is an outside shot for a potential playoff team, or are you just looking to, you know, break 500 and you know, see some improvements?
They started off last year 4-1, one of the top offenses in the league, scoring a lot of points. And then Eifert got hurt, and then injury started to mount. Then they got their heads kicked in by the Chiefs and the Saints, and we instantly knew, like, oh, this team's not—they're not doing anything this year. They're not competing. As typical Marvin Lewis Bengals-led fashion, they can't compete with the good teams. So we knew right then and there it was over. But they started off hot, and they started off good, and we're putting up points. And if this team is healthy, the roster is talented. They have weapons. It's not unrealistic to think Joe Mixon in his third year takes a big step and in this offense that I think really could fit him, that John Ross in his third year takes a big step, that Tyler Boyd, after taking a big step last year in year three, takes another one in a contract year. And they have three really good receivers. And, oh, Eifert is healthy finally, and he's a really good tight end. And in that scenario, yeah, your O-line's poor, but I think with that many weapons, defense are going to be a little scared to rush you a little bit, and you can have a successful offense. So I think there is a scenario where we look up and we go, man, this is a 10-win team here, and they've got a really good offense and a solid defense that at least has some pass rushers. And you've seen a lot of teams that win that way, and maybe not win at all, but get to the playoffs and, you know, enjoy that success. But I do think there's a lot of reasons to say, well, why is this team constantly injured? Why do they keep losing their players? Why are the backups, when they come in, not up to par to keep up the talent? And maybe it's because of the lack of depth. And maybe it's because some of these guys, injury prone is kind of a weird thing to say, but maybe they are. And it's going to happen again, and we can't count it out. So I come back to earth and I say it's probably likely they get 7 wins, start off slow, pick it up, get it together, and just enough to get you excited for the following year. If Jonah Williams comes back healthy, then they have another good draft, and they can keep building on what they started.
So I'll finish this with a way I've been kind of talking with everybody and kind of throwing this fill-in-the-blank question, and it could be a win-loss total, it could be kind of where how the season goes, but if the 2019 season ends in blank, it was a disappointment.
Oh, man. If it ends in the bottom of the AFC North, it was a disappointment. And I'm going to say that because I think it's up for grabs. I think there's a shifting in powers, and that started last year during the draft when Browns got Baker Mayfield, and then the Ravens come right back and take Lamar Jackson, and even the Steelers jump back in and take Mason Rudolph, even though they're still going with Big Ben at the time. The Bengals sat back and said, we're not going to take a quarterback. And then they followed that up this year and did not take a quarterback. So I think these teams could have the advantage, especially the Ravens and Browns, of the next era of the AFC North. And if the Bengals instantly, with a veteran quarterback over these two teams, end up in the basement of this division where the Browns have always been, and where I think the Ravens, talent-wise and with an inconsistent quarterback, Lamar Jackson, could very well be the bottom team. If the Bengals still end up as a bottom team in this division, that I don't think is great, even though I really think the Browns got a lot of talent. That's a disappointment.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. I mean, you're looking at a division where you think, like you said, is kind of wide open, and you know, you got kind of a prove it factor for a bunch of teams this year in that division. And if you end up on the bottom, definitely not coming out in a positive spin. So great answer there. Joe, really appreciate it. Guys, you can go follow him at Joe Goodberry on Twitter, at Locked On Bengals. as well as LA underscore Rambling Bear for myself and Locked On Rams. This is a Locked On Rams crossover. Joe, well, I look forward to talking to you again during the season as we get closer to this game and hopefully kind of revisit some of the thoughts we had here today and see how far we've come along. But I appreciate it, man, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Yeah, Brad, thanks for collaborating on this podcast here.